Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Our Madonna Week continues with a look at the pop star's style over the years. She's not called the material girl for nothing. From the very beginning, Madonna has embraced an ever-shifting fashion sense, one that has changed pretty dramatically over the years. It's safe to say she's not only a pop icon, she's a fashion icon too. And joining us to look at how she got there is Simon Doonan, writer and fashion commentator. His newest book is called The Asylum, a collage of couture reminiscences and hysteria. Simon Doonan, welcome to Soundcheck.
It's great to be here.
So she is the material girl, and she has kind of earned that name over the years, hasn't she?
Madonna is like an incredible patron saint for fashion. And that's really a function of timing, because right from the get-go, she was very concerned with her look. But she started performing in the 80s, and the 80s was the era of postmodernism. So what Madonna did very carefully was model herself on style archetypes. Meticulously, you know. So right from the beginning, you see her dyeing her hair blonde and moving into a sort of Marilyn-ish kind of mode. And over the years, she has sort of parodied Marlene Dietrich, Verna Lisi, Italian movie stars. Mm-hmm. So she, during that era of postmodernism, she was meticulously representing the siren glamour of Jean Harlow. You know, so the timing on that caused her to have a huge impact on people's consciousness.
So you think that she knew what she was doing fashion-wise from day one?
From day one, she was very enmeshed with the fashion world. She used to perform at the Roxy in New York City. I saw her perform very early on at this place called the Fake Club in L.A. And both of these places were, the habitués were fashion people. Mm. So right off the bat, she's meeting people like Herb Ritz, stylists, you know, these were her peeps. You know, if there was a makeup artist who was really good, Madonna was going to know about her.
Mm. So she also, the time period you're talking about is the rise of MTV. And it would be hard to overstate the impact of her music videos, both, you know, from a musical and from, I guess, a fashion point of view. If you look at the early music videos, Lucky Star, Holiday, songs like that, she's got the thrift store kind of post-punk chic thing happening, the fingerless gloves and all of that. Was that in the air at that point, or was that really something that she put together?
I think Madonna had a really good sense of who was the groovy stylist. She also had her own innate sense of style, has, let's keep the present tense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of having an innate sense of style and a passion for self-presentation, and then knowing who the groovy person was to call in L.A. and, you know, the up-and-coming person who would have a sense of how to pull it together for her. And, you know, when you see her in those documentary films and stuff, you see somebody who is quite prepared to wait until the lighting is perfect. Mm. She's quite prepared to sit there until they get the eyeliner right. She's not a slob. She's not like a Kesha who endears herself to her audience by sort of being essentially very thrown together. And people love that because they can relate to that. Or Gaga, you know, Madonna always had that old school movie studio meticulousness that you hear about, that you can only equate with old school movie studio sensibility.
So even though in these early music videos it looks thrown together, it is in fact a carefully sort of considered look from Madonna, as in the video for this song called Holiday.
Forget about the bad.
30 years ago this summer that that first Madonna album came out. It's the occasion of our Madonna Week on Soundcheck. And we're talking about Madonna as a fashion icon right now with Simon Doonan, the author and fashion commentator, and Barney's creative ambassador at large. What does that mean?
Well, I've been at Barney's for 27 years, and for 25 of those years, I was creative director. Actually, the first year that I was there, we did an event, and Madonna came, and she modeled in it. It was actually something I'll never forget because it was at the height of the AIDS crisis, and we did a benefit for the St. Vincent's Hospital, and Madonna agreed to model, which, you know, she was definitely a huge name by 1986. This was 1986. So she came and modeled one of these customized denim jackets, and she brought with her her ex-roommate, who was named Martin Burgoyne. He was an artist, and he was afflicted horribly with Kaposi sarcoma, AIDS, and Madonna stayed with him all night, held his hand, was very physically affectionate to him at a time when people thought it was almost reckless that we were having an AIDS benefit in a store. Well, no one will shop there. You know, there was still that incredible fear.
Right.
And Madonna, you know, to her credit, was completely very, very conscious of demonstrating that she wasn't scared of catching something from this guy who was her roommate who subsequently died. So, you know.
It's a nice story.
Yes.
Now, you and Madonna have traveled in kind of overlapping circles on a number of occasions. You write at one point about doing aerobics with her in the early 80s, and was it Hollywood, West Hollywood, something like that?
Well, she spent a lot of time in L.A. on the West Coast and in the 80s, and she would go to the Sports Connection, which was also known as the Sports Erection, which was the gym where they filmed Perfect, that gym. And I would do aerobics there, and I remember her seeing her often in the classes there. But I guess our closest collision was when my book, Confessions of a Window Dresser, came out, and she bought the rights to it. She, Maverick and New Line Cinema.
Right. Maverick being her record label and production company. So, but has anything been done with the option yet?
No, it's sort of a very much a Hollywood story where it's sort of whirling around in the ether somewhere. Mm-hmm. And but I was just so thrilled because she related to it because we're both from the boonies. We both clawed our way into a world of glamour and style, you know, just because we couldn't bear the idea of staying where we were born, and we had to get where things were happening. So, I a lot of people relate to that story. She's got a lot of drive. She's got more drive than me. I got myself here, but Madge has the drive.
Well, you know, that tour wasn't called Blonde Ambition for nothing back in 1990. Around that time, late 80s, early 90s, Madonna establishes the innerwear as outerwear thing, you know, the cone bra and stuff. Where did that come from? Is there anything, any kind of precedent for that?
Yes, absolutely. Vivian Westwood, who's credited with inventing punk, she did a collection where she put brassieres on the outside of clothes. Jean-Paul Gaultier was also into that kind of thing of looking at corsetry and from the 50s and saying, wow, it's actually objectively very beautiful, like a long line girdle from Fredericks of Hollywood, circa 1950s, is an object of beauty with the cone bra and the seams and the stitching. It's like building a bridge or something. So Madonna, you know, has collaborated a lot with Jean-Paul Gaultier, and Gaultier made the famous gold cone bra outfit for her. And actually, she loaned it to me, and we put it in the window at Barney's one Christmas. And
I'm glad that's how that sentence ended.
Yeah.
Because when it began, I thought it was going to go in a very different direction.
Believe me, when that gold outfit arrived in the display studio, we all had our paws all over it. And there were blonde hairs in it because she'd been wearing it on tour. So, you know, obviously there were terrible fights over those. But it was the most exquisite piece of construction. It literally took 2 hours to unlace it. I don't know how she got in and out of it. I think they must have put zips in some of them subsequently. But it was a really... you know, a beautiful piece of craft and skill to make that outfit. And that's very Madonna.
And also very Madonna is the fact that she didn't just wear this out on stage. She wore it while singing songs like this one, Like a Prayer. Like a Prayer from, well, that was a song that she sang on that Blonde Ambition tour back in 1990, wearing the Gautier cone bra outfit that Simon Doonan was just talking about. We're talking about Madonna as a fashion icon as well as a musical one. And, at this point, you know, she's been on the scene for 6 years, 7 years, and the look has changed several times. It's not just, you know, one day she was this kind of post-punk thing and the next day she's wearing... you know, underwear as outerwear. There are lots of other things going on. At what point do you see a kind of a statement being made by the way the look is changing over the years?
Well, I once created an homage to Madonna in the windows at Barney's, and it was called The Mesmerizing Mistress of Perpetual Reinvention. And we had her as a sort of sideshow. And she's Frida Kahlo, she's Marilyn, she's Evita. She inhabited all these archetypes. So that was her thing, like finding a new one and transforming herself. And as I say, it was a very postmodern thing. So there's a lot of Madonnas to love. You can take your pick.
Mm-hmm. And quite a few that maybe didn't go over so well.
Oh, not with me. I'm like an uncompromising, unconditional fan.
Simon Doonan's latest book is called The Asylum, a collage of couture reminiscences and hysteria. We're remembering, looking back at 30 years of Madonna's music this week on Soundcheck, but right now looking back at 30 years of fashion as well. Big moment in 1990 with Vogue. Now, you've mentioned some of the archetypes, you know, Jean Harlow, Marilyn Monroe, Eva Peron. But this was looking at something, you know, at a different end of the spectrum.
Well, this is an interesting story. About 2 years before, a year or two before Vogue exploded, I was working on a charity benefit with Suzanne Bartsch, who's a New York nightclub gal who's still around, amazing person. And we put together this idea of a voguing ball. Now, those listeners who've seen Paris is Burning will know what I'm talking about. There's an incredible subculture in New York that is built around the idea of voguing. And these kids, they form gangs and they compete with each other. And this gal, Jenny Livingston, made this extraordinary documentary, which is actually, I would say, my favorite documentary ever. So Suzanne Bartsch and a group of people, we all put together this charity event called the Love Ball. And we would have corporations such as Ralph Lauren, Barney's, compete in the ball context with the regular people from Harlem, the House of La Beige, the House of Dupree, the House of Chanel. They all had these incredibly she names, these gangs from Harlem. And it was a spectacular event. And at one point, I looked around and I thought, wow, Madonna's here. She walked in. Her hair was dyed black at the time. She was doing sort of Gina Lollobrigida look. And she was with Alec Kashishian, who subsequently went on to make that extraordinary Truth or Dare documentary.
Right.
So they sat down and you could see Madonna's eyes were out on sticks. When these people from these various houses came out and they vogued, it's an extraordinary thing to watch. These kids who are so skilled in this.
Would you describe voguing as dancing or...
It's an incredible combination of dancing and posing.
Yeah.
So these kids strike these kind of model poses, such as parodies of modeling poses, in fast succession, mm-hmm. in time to music. And I mean, it's so hard to convey in words how magical it can be.
And, you know, and then there's, of course, her song. Which...
And 2 years later, of course, Madonna, being the incredible archaeologist that she is, recognizes that she's seeing something truly extraordinary, and she, you know, put together this idea of Vogue. I can't remember, did she write the song herself?
Apparently she co-wrote it.
Okay, well, she became passionate about voguing, and she sort of, I think, affiliated with the House of Extravaganza, which was one of the younger houses, and hired these guys. They came on tour with her. They taught her how to do it. She's a quick learner. It was, she brought voguing to the broader consciousness. Mm-hmm. It was this marginal little thing going on in Harlem, and Madonna, God bless her, exploded it onto a broader stage.
And it was a sensation, the song Vogue by Madonna. Vogue from Madonna, part of her ever-shifting sense of style. That's what we're talking about on Soundcheck with Simon Doonan, the author, fashion commentator, creative director at large for Barney's. Madonna, of course, continues to make news, including her performance at the Super Bowl in 2012. So, Simon, she's still making fashion statements as well as musical ones, even today.
Well, at the Super Bowl, of course, she has Riccardo Tisci, the designer for Givenchy, who's the hottest name in fashion, do her outfit. You know, she's always on point. It was, I think, one of the best Super Bowl things because it was what the Super Bowl needs to be. It was like the entry into Rome, Liz Taylor. It was a parody of something incredible that was about arriving in a massive stadium. Like, she's so smart.
That's not what the Super Bowl needs. What the Super Bowl needs is more of Eli Manning and the New York Giants, Simon, with all due respect. Thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Simon Doonan's latest book is called The Asylum, a collage of couture reminiscences and hysteria. This is Soundcheck.